Welcome to another episode of the SaaS Podcast. I'm your host, Omar Khan, and this is a show where I interview proven founders and industry experts who share their stories, strategies, and insights to help you build, launch, and grow your SaaS business. In this episode, I talk to Brennan Dunn, the founder of Right Message, a SaaS product that helps increase conversions by showing website visitors the right message at the right time. In 2017, Brennan and his co-founder decided to turn a JavaScript library Brennan had built for his email marketing course into a fully-fledged SaaS product. They managed to raise $500,000 thanks to Brennan's existing network and relationships from his previous successful ventures. The product launched in early 2018 and quickly grew to $35,000 in monthly recurring revenue within the first year. However, the founders soon started experiencing problems. Firstly, customers were struggling to implement the product and didn't have the pre-existing data that the product needed. Secondly, the founders hired quickly, leading to a high burn rate and eventually running out of money. As a result, the business stopped growing and struggled to get new customers, forcing the founders to downsize the team. The lack of progress also drove both of the founders to lose motivation and start focusing on other projects instead. Eventually, Brennan bought out his co-founder using his personal savings and started to focus on rebuilding the business. He narrowed his target market to online creators this time, and by offering personalized onboarding to land influential customers and build credibility, Brennan has managed to start turning things around. After years of stagnation, the business is growing again. In this episode, you'll learn how Brennan overcame a period of stagnant growth and demotivation by narrowing his focus to a specific niche and rebuilding his product. Why doing things that don't scale, like personalized customer onboarding, can be a powerful strategy for reigniting growth in a struggling SaaS business. We talk about how leveraging founder relationships and targeting influential customers can unlock growth opportunities for your startup, what strategies Brennan used to lower friction for new customers and expand his top of funnel, leading to a resurgence in growth, and why building a business that aligns with your desired lifestyle and making time for passions outside of work are essential for long-term founder success. So I hope you enjoy it. Are you looking to sell your online business or buy one to start your entrepreneurial journey? Discover exciting opportunities with Bupos.com. Bupos is the number one platform for buying and selling profitable online businesses and the first to offer built-in acquisition financing for qualified buyers. At Bupos.com, you can explore their exclusive listings, browse listings from other marketplaces, or submit your own deal for approval. Bupos can offer pre-approved financing for recurring revenue businesses, allowing you to access fast funding with no personal guarantees. And their experienced M&A advisory team supports you every step of the way. To learn more, visit sasclub.io/Bupos. That's sasclub.io/BOOPOS. Sign up today and get qualified to sell your business or find your next deal. There's a world where your CRM is powerful, easily configured, and deeply intuitive. Atio makes that a reality. Atio is built specifically for the next generation of companies. It syncs with your data sources, easily configures to their unique structures, and works for any go-to-market motion from self-serve to sales-led. Atio automatically enriches your contacts, syncs your emails and calendar, gives you powerful reports, and lets you quickly build Zapier-style automations. The next generation of companies deserve more than an inflexible, one-size-fits-all CRM. Join 11 Labs, Replicate, Modal, and more, and scale your startup to the next level. Get your free account at atio.com. That's ATTIO.com. Brennan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Omar. Thanks for having me.
Do you have a favorite quote, something that inspires or motivates you that you can share with us?
It's not a quote, but it's something I kind of learned the hard way early on, which has stuck with me ever since. So, and that is, no one's ever paid me to code. And this is something that has carried over to my product days, where I think if you're like me and you're a technical kind of founder, you get obsessed with the features, you get obsessed with like the building of it, the architecture, all that stuff. And the thing I had to really, it's still one of these things I struggle with constantly, is the realization that I learned way back when I used to do a lot of consulting was clients didn't hire me for code, they hired me for business benefit, right? So that's kind of my, like, I'm not a quote person, but that's my like grounding thing that I'm always like, if I could put that on a wall, I should, but that's what should be there. Because I do get distracted by like rabbit holes of code and architecture and all that stuff that is important, but ultimately isn't what people buy.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I think I'm very much like you. I find it coding is a great way to just disconnect, do something.
It's therapeutic.
Yeah, therapeutic. Yeah. Many people would think we're
insane,
weird, insane, but yeah, there's something definitely there if you're built like that. So tell us about Right Message. What does the product do? Who's it for? And what's the main problem you're helping to solve?
Yeah, so we help companies that do a lot with email marketing better understand, segment, and personalize their email list. So we tend to work with nowadays mostly creator type people. So we call them pro creators, which would be not pro creators, but pro space creators who are doing 7-8 figures a year, usually selling courses or coaching. But we also have a smattering of like software businesses, media brands, and even agencies who use us.
Great. So maybe just explain a little bit how the product works, because there's different components to this. There's the experience that people get when they visit the website. There's integration with whatever email service provider you may be using. There's some level of personalization that gets delivered on the website. So maybe just describe what that experience looks like and which parts of that is driven by Right Message and which parts are kind of supported, like, you know, the email marketing piece.
Yeah, good question. So we're easiest thought of as a bridge between your email platform and your website. So what that means tangibly is if somebody from your list goes to your website and you segment them as like a customer, so they're tagged with customer or whatever else, that data gets pulled to your site and then you can make changes on your website depending on that. So, you know, for example, you could say like if a returning email list subscriber is back on your website, don't show email opt-in pop-ups, right? Like don't show the pop-ups, show a sign up for a trial, you know, call to action if they haven't started a trial or they're not a customer. Likewise, you can also do things like, you know, changing out logos depending on what industry they're in or showing a different case study or something like that. So we make it really easy to pull data down and also to collect data through behavior, like what pages they're visiting, what ad campaigns they came from, what kind of content they're reading the most of, what affiliate sent them, along with what we call what the industry calls zero party data, which would be surveying. So, you know, we can collect this data and then send it right back up to the email platform, which you can then use for future interactions on the website or to then send better, more targeted email campaigns.
Got it. Yeah, I was reading something about predictive intent the other day, and it sounds like that's basically what you're helping to achieve in terms of figuring out when people are most likely to want to buy, to engage, to what they need, and then getting that right offer or content in front of them. Something that Netflix does very well in terms of helping us to binge watch.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. Like I always bring up the Netflix example because they don't just do the recommendation engine thing, but they also go as far as to change the cover art for films to be like, oh, I like Robert De Niro. So if he's in a film and they show me that film, it's probably going to be him on the cover, whereas somebody else who likes, you know, some other actor would see potentially somebody else.
I did not know that.
Yeah, they do that. It's wild. We're not that behavioral science-y, to be honest. A lot of the way that people use us is a lot more straightforward. Like we basically allow people to set up flowcharts or automation campaigns as a flowchart on your site. So you could say like, all right, if somebody's on my site and they are anonymous, I want to show them my newsletter opt-in form. But then if they're back and they're not tagged customer, I want to show them my promo to be a customer. And if they are a customer, I want to get them to like a, you know, affiliate page or something that I have. So usually what people are doing with us is to kind of use us as a routing tool to show different content, you know, whether those be pop-ups or call to action buttons in your nav or different hero areas or whatever else, depending on who you are and what you should do next. And the benefit of us is we work as like a JavaScript include. So It's not dependent on any content management system. You don't need to use us. You can keep using WordPress or Webflow or whatever else. And that's been kind of nice and compelling for a lot of people too.
Great. Give us a sense of the size of the business. Where are you in terms of revenue, number of customers, size of team?
Yeah. So we're at about 20,000 in MRR, which I'll get into more of that later as to why we're not higher. And we have about 250 paying customers. And our team right now is 3.5 effectively. So 3 full-time. And then a part-time person helping with design.
Right. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to invite you onto the show was one I think is an interesting product, but it's a very interesting story as well, where there have been a lot of ups and downs on this journey. And I think that for, you know, a lot of the times I'm talking to founders who are, you know, 10, 20 million in ARR. And there's useful lessons to learn there, but a lot of people listening to the show are at much earlier stage trying to get to, you know, the first 100K in ARR or something like that. And I often hear from people, it's like, hey, we want to hear more of the stories of, you know, people who are just, you know, ahead of us rather than, you know, building sort of an 8 or 9 figure business. And with your story in particular, I think there's some really interesting lessons that hopefully we can distill down and help people listening to this kind of go away and, on the one hand, get some maybe motivation or inspiration if they need it, and two, some ideas on, you know, when things aren't working, how do you turn things around? What do you do? And you know, some of the things that you've done over the last year to take the business that was effectively, like, I think you said, for a year and a half, almost 2 years, there was stagnation, there was decline, and then you turn things around and the business has started growing again. So I think there's some really, really helpful, useful things to unpack there. So I'm going to try my best to make sure that we cover all of those things. Let's start with where the business was founded. So I think it was 2017. Where did the idea come from?
Yeah, so I had, at the time, I was kind of known for this course, you know, video course on email marketing. And one of the bonuses of this course was a zip file with a bunch of JavaScript in it that allowed people to put the JavaScript on your site, tweak it a bit. And then you could use that to, like, change content in your website using jQuery, you know, like change different headlines or whatever else, depending on data that you had in your email platform. So I was teaching people how to do things like, oh, email marketing done right. One component of that is to segment your list. Oh, why don't we make it so if they're segmented by industry, maybe change up your sales page to just have, like, testimonials for that industry, right? So I included some boilerplate code that they could use. The problem was that most of the people who bought my course were people doing email marketing, and they look at a zip file full of JavaScript files and they're like, what is this? So one of the customers of that course was a guy named Ankur Nagpal, who at the time owned a company called Teachable. And he's like, stop screwing around. Can you just make this a SaaS? and I was like, sure. Like, that sounds great, but, you know, money, time, all that kind of stuff. And he said, well, how about this? I will help organize some fundraising. You bring on somebody to work on it with you. And yeah, let's make that happen. So that's exactly what ended up happening. Now, we raised about $500,000 in 2017 to convert a zip file of JavaScript into a functional software as a service business.
What a great story. Yeah, I found a tweet from you where you said, like, right before write message was write message, it was a bunch of custom JavaScript that managed to sync with Drip's API. And I think it's hilarious that Ankur was like, no, that's too hard. It's like, wasn't it, if I remember, he was the guy who built the first version of Teachable, wasn't he?
Yeah, no, he was the owner and founder of Teachable, yeah. Yeah, well, so most of our customers are the ones saying the JavaScript thing was too hard, because a lot of them were, again, people who were just using Drip to send. They weren't web developers or anything like that, right? Ankur knew what it was, and he's like, what if you put a hosted front end to this thing that we like and set up Stripe behind it to charge people monthly? Like, that sounds like a good plan, doesn't it? that's the origin story of the conversion, if you will, from a zip file to a software business.
Did you have, when you raised that seed round, did you have any customers at that time?
Of the course, yes. Of the, no, we raised it before we had anything for the SaaS.
So why do you think you were able to raise that money? I mean, it wasn't huge, but it's not an insignificant amount of money to raise $500,000.
Yeah. You know, to be honest, we could have raised more potentially. We had offers to do more, but we thought that's what we needed. And so why I think it helped, and again, this isn't to toot my own whatever thing, but I had a successful exit before. It wasn't a huge exit, but back in 2015, I sold my first business, PlanScope. And since then, and before then, I've always been good at the whole like going to conferences and networking with the right people kind of thing. So the fundraising effort, honestly, like I didn't have a slide deck or I've never done anything like that. It was really just fired off an email to Nathan Berry. Hey, thinking of doing this, UN. Rob Walling, hey, thinking of doing this, UN. It's all people I knew, friends of mine. So it wasn't like, it was more of a friends and family kind of thing than me doing like, you know, actual fundraising. So I did have an advantage there, I admit. But yeah, I mean, the fundraising part was relatively easy.
Now I remember where the first time I came across you was, I think I heard a podcast more than 10 years ago talking about PlanScope. It was like, yeah, it's like we're showing our age now.
Yeah.
All right. So you raised this money, and what did you do in terms of like, how long did it take to build the SaaS version of this JavaScript, you know, code that you had? And you know, what was the journey to getting to those first 10 customers?
Yeah. So what we did was we raised the money, and then I kind of went off and tried to use the money by building up a team, right? So while that was happening, Shai was working on the initial kind of MVP, if you will, of the product. And I think we incorporated it in November of 2017, and we launched in about January. So it was about 4 months or whatever that is from like official incorporation with the money in the bank to selling something. So what we did was I was kind of recruiting with the money, you know, using the money. And then also we put together a very simple kind of teaser page that was effectively a 500-word sales letter that had an opt-in form at the bottom. And how we showed instead of told with this page is I wrote some custom JavaScript with some like drop-down fields or drop-down forms where you could say like drop-down of industry to whatever, drop-down of email platform, you know, choose ConvertKit, choose Drip, choose HubSpot, whatever. And it would change the text in real time as you did that. And that was kind of like our way of saying like, our tool will let you do that. Imagine if you knew this person is this or this person is that, they're looking at a sales page or a web page or whatever. And this is what would happen. Obviously, it wouldn't be as overt, but this is effectively what would happen. So we actually built up an email list of a few thousand people. I think it was at about 3,000 or 4,000 people by the time we launched with that. And I kind of also, while doing that, got invited to speak at a few different events, and I couldn't point people to sign up for a product. So I just said, hey, like go over here and, you know, drop your email address. And then I just kept emailing it once a week and kind of built a newsletter, you know, around this kind of idea of personalized marketing. And it was nice because by the time we launched in, I think it was January or February of 2018, we actually hit like 10,000 in MRR pretty much within a month, I want to say. And we did that by, because my background alongside PlanScope was selling like courses. I used to have a company called W Freelancing where I sold a bunch of courses on freelancing and stuff. So I kind of treated the launch of the product like I would launch a course. So there was urgency. There was like a, you know, a pricing scheme that if you bought launch week, you'd get a good deal and stuff like that. So we actually had a nice like burst of momentum. You know, we had this new team being developed, and we actually were growing really nicely and like 20% month over month. And I want to say about a year into it, we were pretty much at about 35,000 in MRR, which I was really happy about. But then reality started setting in, and I realized I couldn't just keep doing like the whole like digital product launch strategy stuff for software business. And, you know, the whole audience thing could only go too far. And a lot of what ended up happening was we realized, okay, the tool we built, people were wanting it because it's cool. It seemed interesting, but we didn't really have a lot of case study data to back it up with at the time. And on top of that, the only way to personalize your website is if you have the segment data, like what industry someone's in. And a lot of our customers were like, how do I get that information, right? Like, you know, we're kind of like, you know, if this, then that, and we're the then that, but they didn't have the if this bit. So we were like, oh, you know, we kind of had this, this kind of issue where our rocket ship was, you know, starting to kind of falter. And from there, we, you know, a little after that, we quickly had ran out of that money, never got that continuous 20% month over month that would have made it so we didn't, you know, run out of money. And we kind of reverted back to effectively being operationally a bootstrap team with myself and my co-founder. And, you know, we were living off the money we had, and we kind of pivoted the product to then also allow for segmentation so we could satisfy the if this part. But it wasn't just growing the way we wanted it to. And we were struggling. We were kind of lost in the wilderness for a bit. And then we both kind of got demotivated, and we didn't go separate ways. And we were still like tending to the product, at least the, you know, support system and stuff like that. But there wasn't no forward momentum on the product. There wasn't momentum on the growth side or the development side or anything like that for years. And we just kind of like, you know, we'd shot up, and then we kind of, you know, petered down over time.
Okay, great. So let's kind of talk a little bit about that. So first of all, the getting to the first 10K in MRR and then getting to around 35K happened fairly quickly. But in many ways, you had been working on this for much longer than that, because you had been building credibility and authority in the email marketing space. You had already been building an audience before you had been building this email list. So I think, you know, a lot of the times we discount that, but there's a lot of, you know, pre-work that went into laying the foundation, having this audience in place before you were able to get those types of results. So you raised the 500K seed round around 2017. Initially, things are looking good. Revenue is growing. You're inching your way towards, you know, what, $500,000 in ARR. And then you start to run across some of these issues. You'd already hired a team, and so you have effectively a burn rate to worry about. And then is that basically like the thing that happened? Like, you just got to the point where it was just like, okay, we've got this money coming in, but we're spending more than you know, we're bringing in. We've gone through the money that we've raised. We can't afford to keep this team around anymore.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah. So we were making some money, but our burn was higher, right? And we always thought eventually, like, before, it's that quintessential kind of founder thing of like, before we run out of money, our revenue will grow such that it surpasses our burn. And that didn't happen. And I think we hired fast because we thought, you know, why have $500,000 in the bank? Might as well use it. So yeah, I mean, we were kind of a victim of our own success in a way, or at least early success. And yeah, we just realized, okay, so, you know, we kind of gradually pared back the team, and then we just had to realize, okay, like both for Shai and myself, we wanted to take out a livable salary. I mean, he was in North London. I was at the time in the US. You know, we've got families and stuff, like, we can't do the ramen thing. So, you know, for that to happen, that meant once we dropped below about 20,000 in MRR, so we were, you know, gradually declining, because a lot of that early growth was people getting a great deal, but then no one's going to keep paying monthly if they don't act on that deal, right? So we didn't have the software at the time to really make it so a lot of people could really benefit from the product, because they didn't have the segment data. So when we got under 20K, it's like, okay, that's when, again, we're now just after product expenses, like the server and everything else and all the stuff, divide that by two. And that's pretty much what Shai and I would need. So that's around when we're like, okay, we just need to go back to like, just you and I live off this. Hopefully we can keep it steady. And you know, even if we don't make any more anytime soon, at least we're able to live off this. But yeah, then we both like, I think it was just the lack of like growth we were seeing and everything else, and not really sure what we had to do next. It just, we both got very demotivated, and yeah, we just kind of like stagnated again for a while. And I pursued other things. He pursued other things. Product was still there. We had a core group of customers who were still benefiting from it and loved it, but we weren't doing much on the growth side.
So you effectively keeping the lights on, you're making sure that you can, you're providing support for the customers that you have, but you're not actively trying to go out and figure out, you know, investing in marketing or sales and growing the business, or I guess evolving the product. And this was that period that went over for about, I think you said like a year and a half, 2 years. What changed then? Because that's a long time to go through feeling unexcited about a product and a business. And yet when, you know, we talk about what you're doing now, I sense energy, enthusiasm. What made the shift? What got you excited again? What got you believing in this thing again? Because, man, I know if I'm like, if I personally like, I'm down about something and I'm ruminating for like 3 days about it, it feels like forever just to turn myself around from that, right? And maybe it's just the way my brain works, but to kind of go through that for years and then, you know, turn things around and get excited and find a reason to put your heart, your soul, and energy back into this. Like, what was that process like?
Are you an entrepreneur looking to buy a profitable online business or a founder ready to sell? Bupass is the number one platform for buying and selling profitable online businesses. With their exclusive listings, as well as listings from other marketplaces, and the option to submit your own deal for approval, Bupass has you covered. Plus, they're the first to offer built-in acquisition financing for qualified buyers of recurring revenue businesses, allowing you to access fast funding without personal guarantees. And their experienced M&A advisory team supports you every step of the way. To learn more, visit sasclub.io/Bupass. That's sasclub.io/BOOPOS. Sign up today and get qualified to start your entrepreneurial journey or sell your business at the right valuation with Bupass.com.
Okay, so I think the way I'd describe it, if you will, is that last year, so 2023, we kind of had this Hail Mary attempt to reinvigorate things. And that was to do the thing that is usually always a horrible idea, but we did it anyway, which is let's start a new code base and dramatically simplify things and have it the product, instead of it being a platform, which it is, just make it do one thing and do one thing really well and sell that. So we did this, and now we kind of ran into this horrible issue where we had like two code bases to support and all this stuff. It didn't work the way we wanted it to. And at that point, we were both like, okay, this, we need to either like just shut things down and kind of effectively screw over the customers, you know? And at the time we had what, 150, 200 customers who were using us. And they kept paying, so presumably they liked using us and were getting benefit from the product. We shut it down. We sell it, which selling a declining asset doesn't work usually that well. Or one of us buys out the other. I didn't want to sell it, because my last time I sold a business, PlanScope, the new owner drove it in the ground and it hurt me reputationally because I was so tied to that product. I didn't want to shut it down because, again, I knew a lot of these, you know, the customers I mentioned, these were like people I knew from my other, because I've got other income sources besides Direct Message. I sell courses and I've got like a book and all this other stuff. These were kind of the a lot of the fanboys, if you will, of my stuff. And I didn't want to screw them over. So the only option was either he buys me out and tries to like make it better, or I buy him out. He didn't want to buy me out, and I was really wanting to buy him out. So that's the direction we went. And so, yeah, I ended up basically cashing in a lot of my savings personally to buy out his equity, which, again, as a declining asset, it meant just like if we were sold it on the open market, I got what I think was a good deal. And then, yeah, so I was like, okay, I bought this thing with my own cash. So what do I do with it? And the big change that happened, I think, was the realization, and you and I talked about this kind of briefly earlier before we hit record, was that what if like we were getting rejected because people saw our thing as too confusing. And I knew we have an onboarding issue. We have like a product UX issue. We have all these issues. So I thought, okay, what if I just go to people who I would love to be a kind of a flagship right message customer and say, hey, pay me to consult. You don't even need to use Right Message, but you pay for Right Message and you pay for my consulting fee. And I will use this tool that for a lot of new people is kind of confusing on your behalf and make it work really well the way it's supposed to. So I did that. And I did that again and again and again. And that's been brilliant because we've now have some of the biggest named creators on the internet using Right Message, and on their website, under our widgets, it says powered by Right Message. And we have all these people now. We get people all the time because they sign up and we ask them about like, you know, how do you know about us? And they're like, oh, Justin Welsh or Matt Gray or Dan Go or Ben Meir or something. And it's these people with hundreds of thousands of people on their email list who make millions a year in sales. They're all now these great advocates of ours because they're using us. So that to me has been the biggest, like I'm using that momentum to say, okay, now I can use this money and this momentum to make it so it is self-serve. They were really good, you know, good experience for self-serve customers. Cause I don't want to be doing, I don't want to do like, if you remember Bounce Exchange, their model where they had like opt-in software that the only way to use their opt-in software was to hire the agency to do like the copywriting and the design work for their internal tool. I didn't want it to be this weird services company that happened to have intellectual property under the hood. I wanted us always to be a proper, you go to the website, you sign up for a trial, you buy it kind of thing. But I think this momentum over the summer that started and the case studies we're getting now, like we just, for Justin Welsh, we helped him increase overall conversions for his course launch by 38%, which was hundreds of thousands of dollars now attributable to our software. And now we're like, we need to just shout this everywhere and really, you know, so it's that's been the big inflection point, I think, for us is I think my co-founder and I, when we started, we did the kind of quintessential, we don't want to talk to people, go to the website. If you want to talk to us, we have a support email address. But I was much more willing now that I had my own money behind it to say like, I'm happy to sit on demos all day and just grind it out to sell people just so I don't look like an idiot in front of my wife and being like, hey, I blew our retirement on buying this like failing thing that I had started.
So you went from a software as a service to software and a service.
But it's still not that. I mean, you can still buy it independently, but yeah.
Right, right. This was basically a way for you to, it's basically a growth strategy and it helps you raise some additional money to fund the business, and you were telling me earlier that it's basically the same playbook that Nathan Barry used with ConvertKit, and did he kind of, you know him, did he kind of help you kind of with this, or was that something that you had just seen?
I've known Nathan for years. I mean, he's an investor in Right Message, and he and I used to teach joint workshops and stuff before. I remember getting a call one day from him saying, hey, I'm thinking of starting an email platform. I was the first person to help him hire, I think, one of his freelancers by vetting their GitHub account. So like he and I go way back. And I remember seeing how he struggled a lot early on with ConvertKit. Like, I mean, now it's doing what, like 2 million a month or whatever it is, or three. It's doing great now. But when you look at the, like it was floundering at a few thousand a month for a while. And the big inflection point for him was he didn't partner up officially, but like he got in terms of like equity, as far as I know, but Pat Flynn of Smart Passive Income basically championed ConvertKit to his email list and got all the wannabe Pat Flynns to start using ConvertKit. So that's exactly kind of the playbook I'm using. Because what they did after that is then, you know, Nathan went to every peer of Pat Flynn and said, hey, Pat's using ConvertKit, you should too. And then he did the same with like the fitness space and the food blogger space and all the stuff. And that's kind of what we're doing now is we're like a lot of the biggest players in the kind of pro space creator space are now using us. And now I can confidently say, like, you know, can name drop these people and say they all trust us and we're helping them make meaningful amounts of money. Here are some examples and case studies of it. And I think that's going to be our ultimately our saving grace.
So who was the first, let me say that carefully, pro space creator, not one word, that you signed on? Who was that and how did you go about getting that deal done? Because I've seen a lot of people try to do these things and fail miserably at it. So what did you do differently? So
funny enough, it was Pat Flynn. And I knew him, again, I mentioned conferences earlier, because he and I played craps at a table in Vegas from at the after party of like a, or after a conference we were both at. So I think like I've really tried hard to build up really good professional relationships / friendships. I say professional, but these are all people I, you know, text and all that stuff. So, you know, these are people that I genuinely like as people. And yeah, I think like he was the first one. And the more recent ones, like I named Justin Welsh and Matt Gray and everyone else, those are all since the summer of 2023. So they're all kind of recent as of our recording.
So Pat was the first one. I think I don't know Pat. I've, you know, known about him for many, many years, but he's just, to me, he just seems like a genuinely nice guy. There was a time back, I remember, like, I went down to San Diego and I was thinking about, we were actually thinking about moving there at one point. And I thought, who do I know in San Diego that could tell me about where to, you know, it's kind of good places for families to kind of move to and stuff. And I didn't know anybody. And I thought, well, Pat Flynn's kind of knows about San Diego, right? So just randomly, I just sent this email to him because I used to listen to his podcast and stuff. And I'll never forget, he actually replied and he listed out a bunch of communities and places to go and see and stuff. And it was like, he didn't know me from Adam. And you know, he took the time to do that. So I think he showed me he really is a very genuine guy. So I'm glad that he was also there.
Well, their whole team, like there's so many great people. SPI, I mean, obviously the face of it is Pat. But yeah, I mean, Matt Garland, who's, I think, the CEO now-ish, I want to say, like, I think Pat lately has been like more, he's not managing the team as much. And Matt's been doing that. And Matt's a great friend too. I mean, they've got like, yeah, they've got it all put together well. So good company, good brand.
And then so going to Justin Welsh, was that just off the back of just saying, hey, you know, we've been working with Pat or?
No. So I think one of the things that really has helped a lot is I have a course, you know, that earlier course used to be called Mastering Drip. I now have Mastering ConvertKit, right? And that's something I've had for years. And I got a DM from Justin once, I want to say like last spring or something, where he was like, hey, I've heard good things about your course. I'm looking at the sales page. I don't have time to go through a course. Can I just pay you? and it pretty much boiled down to that. And I think that's one of the things is like the course and the email marketing training for me nicely and perfectly complements, like it provides the why behind the how, right? So I kind of look at it as like, if the software is the pickaxe, the training is the map of where to go and swing the pickaxe, right? So I actually have found that that's something we haven't really talked about yet, but that's been a huge kind of component, I think, of all of this has been, like, I'm about to release a new course on segmentation, which I'm teaching how to do it with the right message, or you could do it with Typeform, or you could do it with Tally. But obviously with the right message, I want you to use that. Oh, and by the way, if you buy the course, you get a credit equal to what you paid for the course for right message. So like there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of room for not just going, like for me, if I'm just selling website personalization or segmentation software, you need somebody who already knows that they need that before they're willing to even, you know, commit to your product. Whereas if I do something that's more training where it's like, hey, here's how to think about better understanding your audience, what that means, what you could do with this, so on and so forth. And it's a video course, then that's kind of the gateway drug into right message for me. So my like whole grand plan for marketing is not going to be doing like the traditional SaaS marketing stuff. It's going to instead be, how do I build a lot of great training stuff and have these great big case studies that I can push in the training as examples and teach it and all that kind of stuff, and have all roads lead to right message. And that's basically my plan for the year when it comes to growth.
So you've got these pro creators that you're working with, is helping you build the credibility. You're getting case studies from those. So people can now not just see the functionality of right message, they can actually see it in practice. Having powered by right message on these people's websites probably doesn't hurt either in terms of getting leads. Is there anything else that you're doing, or is it just that one thing that you're focusing on to and just doubling down on that?
That's pretty much it. We're not doing any paid ads. We regrettably haven't touched our blog in like over a year, which I think is a big issue, because I think a lot of people gauge, is this thing still around by when the last blog post was? So I am planning on fixing that. But it's really been a matter of bandwidth, honestly. And that's why a lot of, like you said earlier, the consulting revenue I'm using as a secondary fundraising tool to hire people who can help with that kind of stuff and make it so we can have fresh blog content and everything.
It sort of reminds me of the way that you're positioning the course and then offering the subscription behind that. It reminded me of what Russell Brunson did with ClickFunnels.
I was just going to say, I thought you might say that, yeah.
Was that an inspiration for you?
Not really, because I've honestly never gone through Russell's stuff. I obviously know who he is, but I've never bought his book. I don't even know how ClickFunnels, I know conceptually what it is, but I've never used it. But yeah, I mean, there's probably a degree of that. I've always, weirdly enough, even though I'm in kind of the email marketing space, I've never tried to identify as an internet marketer. So I've kind of shied away in a weird way from the stuff Russell's doing. But yeah, I think there's probably a lot of overlap, because that was his playbook, is like, you know, teach the .com secrets or whatever his book was called. And and by the way, there's ClickFunnels.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's brilliant, because you know, everybody goes into SaaS and everybody thinks that there's one way to sell software. And, you know, he came along and said, actually, I'm going to sell an info product, and on the back of that, a SaaS product. And again, you know, what is it? You know, 100 million, whatever, plus business. There's different ways to, you know.
I mean, even with ConvertKit, Nathan had written a book called Authority, which a lot of the early ConvertKit customers came from that. So I think it does make sense. I mean, it's not maybe for every SaaS, but if you've got, like we do, the issue with right message is we're one of the few software products that do what we do that are not in the enterprise space. So, you know, like our competitors are Optimizely and stuff, which again, we're not going after Optimizely type customers. So it's been a little of a weird thing. We've had to really educate people in order to make a case for our product.
When I first came across right message, it sort of seemed to be targeting like SaaS companies, or at least that's the impression that I got. And that's not surprising, where you get a lot of products and they say, well, we'll go after SaaS companies to start with, because why not, right? Just maybe help us understand why you didn't go down that path, why you chose these creators as your target market. What I'm trying to just understand is, like, how did you figure out what that niche was, what that target market was, and where you could differentiate yourselves? And did you stay away from SaaS because the product didn't really work there, or because you realized it's going to be much harder for us, or for me now, to clearly position this as a differentiated or a unique enough offering that would get their attention?
Yeah. So early on, and even to a degree to this day, we tried to cast a wide net. So we mistakenly thought, okay, anyone who does email marketing should use right message. So that meant SaaS, it meant e-commerce, it meant, you know, plumbing companies, it meant creators or whatever. They weren't even called creators when we started, but that's the new name for them. And I think the reason the creator thing has worked well for us has been, With SaaS, typically, usually the extent of email marketing that they do is like product update emails, right? Like a lot of them aren't really doing a lot with thinking, okay, I need to have like nurturing sequences and I need to have like a weekly newsletter and I need to like think about audience building and like this kind of thing of like, you know, sending people from the email to the website and back and forth and back and forth. Whereas creators do think like that, especially the ones we're going after. You know, they're thinking, okay, I've got a portfolio of courses or high-end coaching offerings. And yeah, if I could just, you know, uncover a bit about somebody's psychographics, like why are they here? What are they struggling with? I can change the way I pitch my thing next time to speak more directly to them. And I think that makes a lot of sense to the kind of people we're going after now. And equally, I think that also works with e-commerce. I just don't know anything about that world. And I think that's actually a good thing because there have been some kind of right messagey kind of companies, but they're all targeting e-commerce now. So I'm like, okay, fine. Keep them there, right? And so I think, and also to kind of close that out, I'm a creator myself. I mentioned I've sold well over 5 million in digital courses since 2011 or however long I've been doing it. Started out as eBooks, then shifted to video courses. I've run conferences before. I've done the whole like, what we used to call info product business that has now shifted to kind of creator business. I've done that. And I still do that. So I think know that audience. Even though I'm a SaaS founder myself, I'm more aligned, I think, with creators than other software businesses.
And I think in many ways that's a really important factor. Like when I talk to a lot of founders who are sort of early stages and they're trying to figure out what their target market should be. And often the factors that they'll look at is, you know, the usual stuff in terms of, do they have the problem? Is the market growing? You know, all of these things. Can I reach target? Can I reach these people? But then the question that I always ask is like, do you actually like working with these people? Like, do you want to spend the next 10 years of your life working with these people? And sometimes really the answer is like, no, I don't, right? And so it's like, okay, well, find somewhere else. And
that's why I didn't go after an enterprise. I dabbled with enterprise accidentally. We had a big Fortune 500 who somehow found us. They reached out and I spent probably at least 20 hours on calls with like teams and this and that, like all these people. And it never turned into anything. And they just wanted to do meetings all day. And I'm like, I just don't like, if that's, granted, yes, maybe you hire that out, sure. But I didn't want us, in our DNA, I always liked, I know this is kind of the often cited example, but I liked always what Basecamp, what they used to say about like, Microsoft can come and sign up for Basecamp. The max they're paying is $99 a month. They can't make us change our code base. They can't keep us, you know, up at, on Saturday building some custom feature that they need. Whereas when you have like a, you know, an enterprise company paying you a ton of money, that's kind of what they expect.
Yeah. All right. We should wrap up. So let's get on to the lightning round. Got 7 quick fire questions for you. Just try to answer them as quickly as you can. What's one of the best pieces of business advice you've received?
I think for me specifically right now, it's play up to your strengths. Cause I think like a lot of founders, I always want to appear bigger than I am. And I've come to embrace like hopping into my Help Scout inbox and sending a thing to a customer where in the signature, it's like Brennan Dunn, founder, comma, write message. And people being like, wow, this is a, like from the guy who owns it. And it's actually not just a scripted, like, you know, outsourced support thing. So I think like play up to the strengths that you are small and can do things that the bigger players can't do. It's good advice I'm trying to live by.
What book would you recommend to our audience and why?
So my favorite business book, it's a book called Badass. Badass, the subtitle is Making Users Awesome. It's by Kathy Sierra, who is probably like, she's kind of been hidden for the last few years, but it's the best book I've written on usability and UX. So highly recommend it for everyone.
What's one attribute or characteristic in your mind of a successful founder?
Focus.
What's your favorite personal productivity tool or habit?
Having kids. They force me to work in a very constrained manner, which makes me very productive.
What's a new crazy business idea you'd love to pursue if you had the extra time?
I'd love to build a really good email marketing platform because I have nitpicks with all the existing ones.
What's an interesting or fun fact about you that most people don't know?
I have my pilot's license.
You do? Wow.
I do. Yeah.
And finally, what's one of your most important passions outside of work?
Kind of boring now that I've got a two-year-old, but I do when the summer, when the weather's nice, as we were talking about earlier, when the weather's nice here in England, I love cycling in the English countryside. I love just road biking and going through random villages and nice pub lunch at a 400-year-old pub or something like that.
Yeah, we were just, for people listening, like you and I were talking about how you're the American who's now in England and I'm the British guy who's now here in the US, although I'm American now as well, so I have to play up both sides of the Atlantic now. So that's great. So thank you so much for joining me, Brendan. It's been a pleasure to finally chat and share the story of Right Message. Looking forward to seeing what you continue to do over the rest of 2024 as you're getting more and more momentum with this business. And now basically kind of, you know, setting out on the new chapter as a solo founder, effectively, of the business this time. Also, we should talk about, you published a book not that long ago, I think it was about 5-6 months ago, right? Which is called This Is Personal, The Art of Delivering the Right Email at the Right Time. And I was thinking at some point, like, you know, maybe we should get you back and just pick your brain and maybe just educate people about some of the things you teach in that book, because there are some really good best practices about email marketing that everyone should be implementing and is not implementing today. And I won't mention any names, but me. And then also the course that you mentioned. So that's called Mastering ConvertKit. And I think the website is what? createandsell.co?
Yeah, Create and Sell is like my digital products side of my world. It's a weekly newsletter and it's also courses.
Yeah, cool. So if people are interested in that, you can go and check it out over there. Great. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And, you know, enjoy your evening in England. And I wish you the best of success with Right Message.
Thanks so much for having me, Omer.
My pleasure. Cheers.
Do you dream of owning a profitable online business, or are you looking to sell yours? Bupost.com is the number one platform for entrepreneurs and founders alike. With Bupost, you can discover exclusive listings, browse listings from other marketplaces, or submit your own deal for approval. As the first platform to offer built-in acquisition financing for qualified buyers, Bupost makes it easier than ever to acquire a recurring revenue business without personal guarantees. Their experienced M&A advisory team is dedicated to supporting you throughout the process, ensuring a smooth transaction. Don't miss out on this exciting opportunity. To learn more, visit sasclub.io/bupos. That's sasclub.io/BOOPOS. Sign up today and get qualified to sell your business or find your next venture. There's a world where your CRM is powerful, easily configured, and deeply intuitive. Atio makes that a reality. Atio is built specifically for the next generation of companies. It syncs with your data sources, easily configures to their unique structures, and works for any go-to-market motion from self-serve to sales-led. Atio automatically enriches your contacts, syncs your emails and calendar, gives you powerful reports, and lets you quickly build Zapier-style automations. The next generation of companies deserve more than an inflexible, one-size-fits-all CRM. Join 11 Labs, Replicate, Modal, and more, and scale your startup to the next level. Get your free account at atio.com. That's ATTIO.com.